podcast episode, we are going to talk about Oslo. Oslo charting a path forward for the world. My name is Rina Sander, and I'm the founder of The Modern India. Please allow me to welcome our guest for this episode, Heidi Sørensen. Heidi is the director of climate agency City of Oslo. She was elected to the Parliament of Norway in 2001. She became state secretary to the Minister of Environment between 2007 and 2012. She has also been a member of committees producing Norwegian official reports on energy and waste management. Welcome to our podcast, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Rina.
I'm so happy you're joining us today on a day where all the cities who are part of the C40 network are gathered here in Oslo. Please allow me to start with the first question to you. Heidi, Oslo is the first city in the world with its own climate budget. What exactly is a climate budget?
A climate budget is a governance tool that can turn long-term goals into short-term financed actions. The climate budget is actually chapter 2 in the ordinary municipal budget, and it's important for us that it is an integrated part of the municipal budget. It puts climate action in the very center of the most important decision-making process in the city. So the climate budget presents a comprehensive overview of the city's work on climate action and divides the responsibility between municipal agencies. The city agencies report on the status of the measures in the budget 3 times a year, and at the same time as they do the financial reporting. I think this is very crucial because if you only operate with climate action plans, you don't have this close following up mechanism that the climate budget actually gives you. So it fosters internal accountability and transparency, particularly important when many national governments, I think, have lost some trust from civil society, including the youth. This also gives cities the opportunity to showcase their leadership, generating public support for short-term emission reduction. And the climate budget is a holistic approach, which breaks down interdepartmental silos. And I think silo thinking is very, very dangerous when it's come to creating new climate solutions. So this is a governance system where all city departments are responsible for delivering on the climate targets.
Interesting. Everything you said, that you actually have a holistic approach to the whole process. But how do you engage everybody who's working in the municipality of Oslo to like join the climate budget? How did you work on the process of the past years, which actually made Oslo leading the way for so many other cities?
I think this is one of the very good things with the climate budget, because as you know, we are, as a municipality, we are run by the politician, and the budget is the most important thing they decide. And in the climate budget, it points out what climate measure your agency are have their responsibility for. And that's a very strong governance signal. And I have really experienced over the last years that different agencies and entities has taken an ownership to the climate measures and developed them further themselves. So I think this is a way to really integrate the climate action work in the city as a whole. So, but it's hard work, it's not easy. We as a climate agency are helping, nudging, talking, and sometimes addressing very hard our good friends in other agency. So to try to make this process as efficient as possible.
I think this is wonderful. And I think you're so right that many young people. So then it's so important that we have municipalities who are so hands-on. But the city of Oslo also has a climate and energy strategy, which is in accordance with the Paris Agreement. I understand that the target is to reduce the city's CO2 emissions by 95% by 2030 compared to the 1990 level. What is the status today, Heidi?
The status today is that we was not able to reach the 50% target. We has reduced the emission on from 2009 to 2020 with 25%. Whether that is good enough, it's not definitely not good enough. Whether it's good, it's up to others to to judge. But I think it has started the most important. The turning point is behind us, and now we are set for the very ambitious target, but still possible target set by 2030, that is to reduce emission with 95%. So I think the ambitious climate goal is very important for us because it says something about that we have to be efficient in our work. Everything is urgent, and when everything is urgent, we have to we will of course make mistakes. We have to learn from mistakes, and I think this is the climate budget is, I think, is a very good example of that. When we put forward the first climate budget, it was definitely not perfect. It was a lot of things that could have been done, improvement points could have been done better. And now when we have put forward five climate budget, they have definitely become better and better for every year, and more of an efficient governance tool to implement climate in the whole of the city of Oslo. So I'm optimistic. I think the 2030 goal is still possible, even though it's going to be very, very hard to reach it. I think it's good to have it there because it's what actually is necessary.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And Heidi, hats off to you, because being the first mover, there's always a set of challenges coming along with that as well. It's true, as you're saying, is 25% good? Could it have been better? But I guess this is a process, and you have put quite tough goals for yourself by trying to reach 95% by 2030. I'm looking forward to see how you're going to work on this. I also understand, Heidi, that the Klemetsrud plant is Norway's largest waste-to-energy plant and emits more than 300,000 tons of CO2 each year. Oslo is the first city to test carbon capture and storage. What is the status of the Klemetsrud plant today?
The status is that it's actually even more. It's 400,000 tons. So it's a big chunk of the climate emissions in Oslo. The status today is that the project has been adopted. The financing of it is in place. And there will be starting building this summer. And the plan is now that it should be finished from 2026. I think that's very, very big achievement. And it's been done a lot of good work in many places in Oslo to actually realize it. And when it's come to reaching the goal, there is no way we could have done the 95% target without a carbon capture and storage. And the Klemetsrud plant itself will reduce the city's total emission by 17%. So that's actually a big chunk. So it's extremely important, and I think it's not only important for Oslo. I think it's important that this will be the world's first carbon capture and storage plant in an incineration plant. And if we are able to export this technology and find solutions for similar plants, we can actually be a great achievement. Only in Europe, there are 450 plants on the more or less same size as our plants in Oslo. So if we are able to connect them to our grid to store the CO2 and to export the technology, I think that would be a big impact on reducing the climate emissions from Europe.
I am so impressed by the speed of the Chemistroot plant that you're expecting it to be ready by 2026, and that you already have been able to reduce it by 17% is really, really good.
No, that I think you misunderstood. When Chemistroot plant is in place, it will reduce the total emissions of the city of Oslo with 17%.
Uh-huh.
So that's extremely, that's a huge number.
That's impressive. Yes, I was impressed just by the number of, the number of 17%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that just shows, Heidi, that being first mover, thinking, dare to think, it really works, because now it's only a few years left, 2026, and we will see this this number actually in reality, how much it is reducing the CO2 level in Oslo. Wonderful. I'm happy to hear that there are other plants in Europe as well. And nothing is better if other cities can learn from Oslo and Oslo can learn from other cities.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. I also understand that Oslo has taken an integrated approach to treat waste into circular bioresources.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many achievements you have done, Heidi. I could have gone on and on, because each question I have for you should actually be a separate episode. But I would like to hear more about this biogas plant, just the way you explained us that Klemetsrud plant is a pioneer, how the work is going on, that it will be finished by 2026, and what you expect. Can you please tell us more about the biogas plant? How is it transforming food waste into biogas?
The biogas plant in Nesa Romerike was a front runner when it came into production in 2012. So it's been there for 10 years. And I think it's the idea is to transform food waste into biogas and biofertilizer. And they are done in several steps. It's a complicated process, but we have very much use of it, because biogas is a is an important fuel for especially for the heavy vehicles. And if we are going to find some CO2 neutral fuel for heavy vehicles, biogas is a very, very attractive alternative. So biogas itself is a useful product, and so is biofertilizer. Biofertilizer has had so far been more expensive, but what we now see on the world scene, when fertilizers prices are skyrocketing, biofertilizers will be a much, much more interesting, also from an economical point of view. From a circle point of view, both products are extremely well adapted and very, very, very useful. The biogas has been with us for some years, and I think we will definitely see places for more biogas and biofertilizers in the future.
Interesting. I understand that the goal of the city of Oslo is that buildings and construction activities in Oslo shall be zero emission by 2030. And I also understand that you are using purchasing power to accelerate the green transition. How has it been, Heidi, to use that purchasing power? Were there any obstacles along the way? Did you have to explain, or were people willingly agreeing to whatever you proposed?
I think that this has been a very, very interesting world. We started out with a strategy, saying that all our agencies should think of climate when they purchased, for instance, building materials or other things. But then we had a response from the market. Corporations came to us and say, you can't have three or four or five different agencies using various kind of criteria, you have to do it in a more coordinated way.
Please allow me to interrupt you, Heidi. Maybe our listeners won't know when you refer to different agencies.
Yes, take that from the beginning. I can try to explain.
Please, go ahead.
I think it's been a very interesting road to how we have used the purchasing power. We started out with a green purchasing strategy, saying that climate should be a part of every transition in Oslo. But as, for instance, we have a building agency, we have a water agency, we have an agency for city development, and they all use purchasing power. But after the first strategy, they used it in a not coordinating way. Then we have a very interesting market response saying that we will be a part of this transition, but please be coordinated. And then we had a market dialogue. We sat together with as climate experts, sat together with the purchasing experts in in another department, and we ended up with a set of 10-day criteria for municipal building and construction project, where the contractors are rewarded based on their ability to provide zero emission machineries and solutions. And we put minimum requirements for any municipal city, any municipal site, construction site should be fossil free in operation. So we were we wonder how will this work when it actually hit the market. And it was amazing to see. Now there are zero emission machineries in operation in more than 30 construction sites in Oslo, and it sent a very clear message to the industry that this is the way forward. And you should never ever underestimate the power of using the purchasing power, because it is like putting your money where your mouth are. Mouth is always efficient. And zero emission machineries has been a success in other way as well. There are huge co-benefits. I visited a zero emission construction site a couple of weeks ago and talked to the workers there, and they are very happy to work there because the environment there is good and it's quite silent. The machinery is not making any noise, and it's close by a kindergarten, and they have got no complaint. So they are joking, telling that, oh, there are so much baby screaming from the kindergarten. It's disturbing our work. So I think that shows that you can have co-benefits from climate measures. And to sum that up, I think most of the climate measures will make your city better for people.
Absolutely. And I'm so happy that you are taking time out to really explain the whole process, how purchasing power has been used as a tool that you actually sat together with experts. And I'm so happy you explained these different agencies that you have: building agency, water agency within the municipality of Oslo. And it's so nice also to hear the added benefits that there is less noise. And I had to laugh when you said that the people working there actually said there were too many babies crying. Let's now move out of Oslo. Mumbai and Oslo are both port cities. You in Oslo are also doing a lot of work to make the port of Oslo emission-free. Can you please elaborate on this?
Yes. I think that's very important. And the Port of Oslo is the largest, actually, public freight and passenger port in Norway. So it's quite a big port. And we always have to bear in mind that if we have freight on a boat, it's much better than on a big truck on the road. So maritime traffic reduces also greenhouse gases in that sense. But we have been very eager to reduce the emission from the port and has put forward a plan to reduce them by 85%. And we have started and with our own emissions. The city operates smaller ferries to the island, bigger ferries to the neighboring municipality Nesodden, and one high-speed ferry traveling longer distances out of Oslo. The largest ferries were retrofitted with batteries in 2019 and 2020, so they are now both zero emission. And this spring, we got four beautiful new island ferries with that was absolutely zero emission and 100% electric. They have been very popular. They are beautiful. You can sit out there. And they were the first ferries that we purchased that was built electrical from the very start. So that was a marking point. And the high-speed ferry will likely to be electric in 2024 or 25. Together, that would cut 12% of the shipping emissions in Oslo. The biggest emissions come from the larger passenger ferries that travel to Denmark and Germany. So we have worked a lot together with them, and the most important measure so far is that we have onshore power that is electric, so they can turn off the diesel engine when they are at the harbor. So that will be very interesting to see whether they will invest in zero emission passenger ferries also. There have been plans that the ferry to Copenhagen should be on hydrogen, and that will be a very interesting development to follow. So the port itself has said that they will be emission free in the port handling onshore by 2025. And the Port of Oslo also invested in an electric workboat that collects trash from the Oslo waterways, which was launched in 2020. So there's a lot of activity going on. I think it's wonderful to make the maritime traffic as zero emission, because there's a lot of benefit to be drawn from that.
Oslo is doing so much good work, and I know that there are so many cities actually looking at Oslo. I would like to ask you, in everything you have touched upon today, the climate budget, the climate and energy strategy, the work with the Klemetsrud plant, food waste into biogas, and the work on the ports. When you look back, Heidi, where and what have been the largest hurdles in your work?
None of those.
Really? Have you
No.
had bad
The largest
bosses or colleagues or?
hurdles are always on the matters of traffic. And this is also what we are most famous for internationally, because 30% of all personal vehicles in Oslo are electric. And that's a world record. But how to reduce traffic and how to make them zero emission. That's always the most difficult thing. You know, we have a toll ring, always debated, but very efficient. So that is, I think that's something that we have more or less will have constantly. But to address the mobility issue, to make your public transport as good as possible, make walking and biking a way of travel is extremely important if you are going to have a good city without any climate emissions. But that's the most hurdle, of course.
I love biking around, and actually I gave my vote to the party that promised me most biking roads. So that was a very selfish motive for who's going to get my vote.
Irina, but that's also very typical. And that's why it's a hurdle, because everyone have quite strong feelings of how they want to travel. And that's natural. But we try to say, we don't care how you travel, as long as you don't pollute the city, and as long you do it without climate emissions. So there is a constant debate.
Yes. We have come to the end for this conversation. I have a last question for you. How does it feel, Heidi, that the whole world is looking at Oslo for the climate budget, for all the good things you are doing? How does it feel to be in charge of city climate leadership and actually showing it in practice? Do you feel like you have to do every year step up, or what is it like to start so many processes and slowly year by year see that it actually works?
That is of course great, but also a little bit frightening. And when this morning we welcomed the 15 pilot city in the C40 network to Oslo to work on their own climate budget, we have to be humble. And to be very frankly with you, every time when we get questions from other cities and they ask us for help, they often come with a lot of very good questions that makes our own climate budget better and better. So it's not like we are here telling a lot of other city how to do things. We learn from other cities a lot as well. So for us, this has been a very interesting road. Without the international cooperation, we wouldn't have come as far as we have today. And we have still a way to go on many issues, and we have still a lot to learn.
That was such a fine ending, Heidi, because then you are actually referring to the SDG number 17, how important partnerships are, that actually by communicating with other people, other cities, you also learn. We have come to the end for the recorded session, Heidi. Thank you so much, Heidi. I wish you all a wonderful day. Bye-bye.